Hi, I'm Dave DeWitt, and today I'd like to share a few thoughts about a biblical perspective on capitalism and socialism. I've been thinking about how we got here, economically. Why is it we live better than the pharaohs of Egypt and the Caesars of Rome, economically? Why do we have advances in medical procedures, pharmaceutical medications, personal and commercial transportation, clean water, computers, cell phones, cable, flat-screened, HD, TVs? Actually, any detailed description I would give of our world would be out of date by the time you heard this podcast. We have so much food and such a variety that obesity is a major problem all the way up and down the economic spectrum from wealth to poverty. Just look around your kitchen or bathroom and compare it to those that were there all through history until very recently. My grandchildren are going to say something like, "Remember back in the old days when people had to actually physically drive their cars themselves?" So how do we get here from a biblical perspective? Where did the modern, it seems like we've moved pretty much past the term postmodern, but where did the modern world come from? I want to suggest the most basic answer is it came from the nations outlined in the statue in Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2, verses 32 and 34 says this, quote, "The head of that statue was made of fine gold, its breast and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its leg of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. He continued looking until the stone was, which was cut out without human hands, and it struck the statue in the feet and of the iron and the clay and crushed them," close quote. Daniel explained that these were successive kingdoms on earth leading up to this supernatural stone, which represented the second coming of Christ and its millennial kingdom described in Matthew 24 and Revelation 20. The head was Babylon, representing the epitome of the ancient empires. Babylon was followed by the breast and arms of silver. This was the Medo-Persian Empire, which created the idea that the laws of the Medes and the Persians were greater than the emperor. Next came the thigh of bronze, which was the Greek Empire. The Greeks gave us an emphasis on logic, reason, philosophy, and democracy, especially through Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. Next came the legs of iron, which represent the eastern and western legs of the Roman Empire. The Romans gave us better roads, tunnels, bridges, fresh water systems, better, cleaner homes. Then via invasion, they brought that north to the Goths, Visigoths, Anglos, and Saxons, and Norsemen. These became the British, Europeans, Scandinavians, and then the Americans. Now we're in or approaching the feet of Daniel's statue. Modernism came to the world through the nations of Daniel's statue and what Jesus called the times of the Gentiles in Luke 21:24. Historically, Rome conquered Europe and England and with it introduced vastly improved technology. But that changed only gradually through the Middle Ages until the Industrial Revolutions, which propelled Europe and its offspring, America, into the modern world. France, via revolution, and England, more peacefully, moved away from a monarchy. The remaining monarchies of the Western world, the Kaisers of Germany, the Tsars of Russia, the Ottomans of Turkey, the Habsburgs of Austria and Hungary, fell during World War I. The Western nations were left without a king and had to develop ways to govern themselves. Two basic systems emerged. Russia, and after World War II, Eastern Europe, adopted socialism. Socialism says production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. So wealth is controlled by the government and theoretically equally distributed to everyone. Socialism was enforced by communism because it could not stand on its own. The West moved toward capitalism. Capitalism is when a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. Capitalism catapulted the West into modernism. When you give individuals the opportunity to create and possess personal wealth, the society gets technologically and economically, though not morally, better. Capitalism is the engine that runs the modern ship. Without an engine, the ship stops dead in the water. Or if you prefer, as I do, an airplane without an engine will crash. But a ship or an airplane with engines propelling it forward will also eventually crash. It'll run into something. A ship needs a rudder, an airplane needs controls. These controls have come from socialism. Without being regulated by the community, capitalism will run amok. You can argue that capitalists will learn that it's prosperous to be generous, but that's never solved the problem of helping those who are unable to financially pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Capitalists are just as sinful as socialists. But don't get the idea that the two systems are co-equal opposites. Not so. Capitalism is an engine. It drives the ship forward. Socialism does not empower anything. It only controls, and its control is stifling. It'll never motivate anyone to do anything. But controls do not propel the ship or the airplane. The control of socialism is useless unless there's a capitalism energizing the society. Also, when socialism and capitalism focus on attacking one another, social progress flounders. What if the rudder of the ship or the controls of the airplane attack the engine? Controls are only useful when their control stays out of the way of the engine's ability to provide power. And power is only valuable if it's controlled. Control is only valuable if it controls power without interfering with that power. But what's the Bible say about all this? The Bible does not directly address the subject of capitalism or socialism. The kings of Israel were not capitalists, and the Mosaic law was not socialism. Jesus and the apostles did not describe capitalism or socialism. Paul's command to work with his own hands so that he may have something to share with anyone with need is not capitalism. And the voluntary distribution of food in Acts 4 is not socialism. Nonetheless, we can see both the value and the dangers of wealth accumulation in the Bible. The Bible has many statements that favor the acquisition of personal wealth. For example, the wife in Proverbs 31, 16 to 18 considers a field and buys it from her earnings. She plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arm strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. In Ecclesiastes 5:18, Solomon said, "Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, enjoy one's self in all one's labors in which he toils under the sun during the few years of life which God has given him, for this is his reward." In 1 Corinthians 9:7, Paul wrote, "Who at any time serves as a soldier at his own expense, who plants a vineyard and does not eat the fruit of it, or who tends a flock and does not use the milk of the flock." 2 Thessalonians 3:10, "For even when we were with you, we used to give you this order: if anyone is not willing to work, he should not eat either." But the acquisition of wealth is also accompanied by warnings requiring control. For example, notice how this is presented in Proverbs 21:5-7. "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty. The acquisition of treasures by a long tongue is a fleeting vapor, the pursuit of death. The violence of the wicked will drag them away because they refuse to act with justice." James warns the rich about living in luxury while treating their laborers poorly. He said, "Behold the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you. cries out against you. In conclusion, we must first of all recognize that Jesus and the apostles focused on heavenly, not earthly treasure. Both testaments of the Bible also exhort us to hard work and receive the temporary benefit of that work here on earth, as long as it's controlled by a righteous morality. Right and wrong, our modern world has turned this into an opulent society of capitalism controlled by socialism. These are not co-equal opposites, but they're both essential for prosperity. Capitalism is the engine, but it will not be sufficient by itself to control itself. Socialism offers controls, but it will not by itself produce anything. Thank you for listening. A longer paper on the subject with footnotes for the quotes is available on our website, relationalconcepts.org.